The following is a Point of View program. Opinions expressed are those of the participants.
Good evening. This is In Other Words, an hour of programming by and about women. I'm Beth Judy. Going back to school as an adult, a working adult, with a family, is a huge and daunting undertaking. But, as we'll hear on tonight's show, making that leap can have great rewards, many of them unexpected. For example, studies show that children of moms who have more than a high school education tend to do better in life, not just financially or in terms of education, but even physically. They live longer. Not long ago, Francie Mall of Polson, Montana, and her husband and kids made the decision that Francie was going to college. As part of that decision, Francie also applied to a women's scholarship fund for assistance. The fund was founded by and in honor of a famous Montanan, Jeanette Rankin, in 1976. Rankin, a native Missoulian, was America's first congresswoman. Tonight, my guests on In Other Words are Francie Mall and Sue Lawrence, both associated with the Jeanette Rankin Foundation and Women's Scholarship Fund. Enjoy. I would so like to thank Sue Lawrence and Francie Mall for joining me on In Other Words tonight. Sue is on the phone with us from Athens, Georgia, and Francie is on the line from Polson, Montana. And I'm going to talk with Sue first for a while and come to you, Francie, later. So, Sue, tell me your title and, you know, what do you do?
Well, thank you for inviting me to join you. I am serving as the executive director at Jeanette Rankin Women's Scholarship Fund. And what we do is we raise scholarships and provide support for women who are 35 and older, who are low income, and who are seeking their technical associate's or first bachelor's degree. So the common term is non-traditional learners, but there are many reasons people go back to school later in life, and we just have some outstanding women who become Jeanette Rankin Scholars, and they use their education so they can conquer poverty and build a better life for themselves and their families. And often they're giving back in their communities, too. So it's a very inspiring work.
Well, we will get deeper into that in a moment. But first, Montanans who are listening may be scratching their heads and asking, what the heck is a Jeanette Rankin Foundation doing in Georgia? Can you tell us a little bit about the history of the foundation and why it's there?
Sure, that's a great question. Well, we like to lay claim to Jeanette Rankin as one of Georgia's outstanding women, too. She actually purchased property near Athens, Georgia. First, it was in a town called Bogart, and then later she got some property in Watkinsville, both near Athens, Georgia, about 60 miles to the east of Atlanta, Georgia, North Georgia. And some of the biographers say that Jeanette was very concerned about the plight of sharecroppers. The boll weevil had come through Georgia and decimated the crops, and so the many sharecroppers didn't have a way of earning a living. They were unskilled laborers, and Jeanette Rankin, throughout her life, was trying to help people who were low income and didn't have opportunities to support themselves. There are a couple of other biographers that say she moved to Georgia because it was closer to Washington, D.C. And that sounds kind of crazy, but I think at the time there were trains that went from Georgia up to Washington, D.C., and it was a whole lot easier than crossing the mountains and the plains in the wintertime to get from Montana to Washington. So when she lived in Georgia, she often would be here all year long but drive back to Montana in the summertime. She loved having children come visit her at her home, and had some boys and girls clubs with activities, and just loved being a part of them and sharing her world travels and adventures with them. And the reason that we got started is Jeanette bequeathed a portion of her Georgia property to help mature unemployed women workers. And her secretary at the time, whose name is Rita Rivers, and four other women became the founding mothers. They got together and talked about what that could mean, helping women, and they formed an organization, Jeanette Rankin Foundation, to honor Jeanette's name and legacy. And our scholarship program was started, and that was way back in 1976.
Wow. How much money did it start with?
Well, the legend goes that the five founders passed a hat, a bucket, and it started with less than $15. It was whatever change in money and dollars that they had when they met at the coffee shop in downtown Watkinsville. But when Jeanette's property was sold, it was $16,000. And to me, $16,000 doesn't sound like a whole awful lot of money. But through the years, that was added to and built up through fundraising events and other people getting involved. And the impact of that investment and that bequest is that more than $2 million in scholarships has been given to almost 800 women all over the United States in the 38 years that our foundation's been around. So I think that's just a very inspiring to people to think, I don't have a lot of money, but I really could impact people's lives. A scholarship is life-changing. It's an opportunity. It's an investment that pays dividends years down the road in changing lives and providing opportunity for people to earn a good living that pays living wages, and to model that for children and future generations, and to become a teacher, become a social worker, become a scientist.
Yeah. I think Jeanette Rankin really never had a lot of money during her life. So it is very inspiring to think that she gave what she had and that it grew like that.
Yes, it seems that she was very, very frugal. And Rita Rivers has many stories about the little cottage. And cottage is a very generous term, because if you look at pictures, her little two-bedroom house kind of looks like a shack.
There in Georgia?
In the woods. Uh-huh. Yes, in Georgia. It was called Shady Grove, and that's where she lived. And she had learned from her travels in India about packed earth floors. So she had a packed earth floor with some tar paper on top and a nice oriental Persian rug on top of that. So she was very frugal.
I've read a little bit about her, and it sounds like she designed the house. I mean, she designed several houses, and she had all kinds of tricky little systems for heat and plumbing and et cetera.
Yes, she did. She it was a problem solver and an inventor in certain ways to take care of the many household activities that happen. She designed what's called a roundhouse that is still here in Athens, Georgia, and the idea behind her design was that women who needed help, whether they were aging or had a disability, could live in rooms that were off the spokes of the circle, and they would have a central caretaker, so they would share in the overhead and operating costs and the utilities, and they would just have one caretaker, which certainly would be very economical and a great way to have care for someone who couldn't live independently,
wow.
And for a whole group who couldn't live independently.
Uh-huh. How forward-looking for back then. Tell us about the foundation. How many of you run it? Are there members or what?
Well, we don't have members, but we do have supporters and friends and volunteers. Right now, our staff, we have three full-time staff and one part-time financial assistant. So we're pretty tiny, we're pretty lean, but we serve women all across the United States. This year we're giving scholarships to 78 women,
wow.
And each scholarship is $2,000, and so part of our work is raising the money to actually be able to give the scholarships. because we have a modest endowment that helps with some of the awards.
Okay, so you're actively seeking your money that you give out, as well as using an endowment. And as long as we're talking about this, you have a website. Why don't you give us the website address?
Sure. It's www.RankinFoundation, R-A-N-K-I-N, foundation.org.
Okay. And let's see, how many applications do you get per year? And by the way, this is not a Montana or a Georgia thing. This is nationwide, right?
Right. It is nationwide. And just this year, we transferred over to an online application system that is saving a lot of time, as well as some headaches. Instead of women needing to fill out print an application form, fill it out, make copies, gather all their paperwork, and then take it all to the post office to make sure it's mailed, they can just do it online a little bit at a time and save as they go.
Mm.
So typically we have about 700 women apply for our scholarships, and they're very competitive. As I told you, we have 87 women getting our scholarships this year. Some are renewal scholars. That means that if a woman is selected for a scholarship and she's still enrolled in school the following year, she can apply for a renewal. So this can help a woman for 2, 3, 4, or up to 5 years. So that $2,000 scholarship, which is what each woman gets, could actually become $10,000 if she is still in school and working towards her degree.
Wow. And how do you, with such a tiny staff, how do you deal with all of those applications? What's the review process?
That's a great question. And that has been one of the strengths of our program. Is we have a very strong group of volunteers, and these are people who understand the impact of education and want to give a little bit of their time. So all of our selection process is done with the help of volunteers. It's a three-tier process, and our volunteers are given an online training, and then they work in pairs, and they have an evaluation grid that they use to evaluate the application itself, the personal statement. We're looking for women who have clear, concrete goals, and we're confident that they will reach their goals. So the level one volunteers work in pairs, and they select the strongest applicants among their set. And this happens each spring. Typically, it starts with the training, and the level one volunteers work in March. Then they send back their evaluations and their recommendations of their strongest candidates, and then level two repeats the process, and then the level three volunteers are the ones who make the selection from all of the strongest candidates. And we would love to be able to give anyone who made it to level three a scholarship, because they're just some outstanding candidates and really, really strong women.
Wow. Is there an interview involved?
We do not have an interview, but a personal statement is really very, very important. It tells a little bit of the woman's history and why she's going back to school and what she plans to do with her education.
Okay. And so, actually, this is a way that anyone listening to this could volunteer. Is that right? That you take people from all over the country also part of the review process?
Yes, anyone from Montana or anywhere, even across the world. This year we had someone paired with someone, a former board member who was in Germany at the time. And so it's exciting. So we've had people paired up across the country who they do their evaluations, then they either email or phone or Skype each other to talk about what their findings are, and to come to an agreement on what candidates go forward.
Wow. And after all this time, you've probably done some analysis of who gets your scholarships. Can you describe that? Are there some ways that you can talk about the group geographically and age-wise, grandmothers, mothers, single women?
That's a great, great question. So we do have a lot of diversity among the women who get our scholarships, as far as their ethnic self-identification. It's a very, very wide range. Women in the age group from 35 to 40, I'd say that's the largest majority of women getting our scholarships, and then the next would be the next age group, 40 to 45, and then on, and then it becomes smaller and smaller, and we have awarded scholarships to a few women who are 60. In fact, one is a school teacher now. She is just so involved in helping her students, and it's really very, very exciting. So no one is too old. I can recall someone on their application saying, she told her mother, she said, but if I go back to school, I'll be 48 years old before I'm finished. And her mother said, you're going to be 48 years old anyway. It's not too late to go back to school. I thought that was an inspiring kind of thing to hear from someone who decided, who needed to change careers, who needed to support herself with a better job. Nowadays, people really need to have at least an associate's or a bachelor's degree to have access to a job that will pay and provide good support. So you asked about the women who get our scholarships. On average, between 80 and 85% are the heads of their households. So they may be single mothers, and many of them are, or they may have a husband who became disabled or lost his job. And some women have disabled children and some have disabilities themselves. But for many different reasons, divorce, death in the family, they decided to, leave their partner, they are single and supporting their families. And so that's the vast majority. And we know from the statistics from the Labor Department that a huge percentage of people living in poverty are single heads of households, single mothers. So we're really pleased that so many are finding a way out by getting an education and that we can help so many of them. And one other group that's of note is that nearly half, on average, are first in their families to go to school. So when you think about going to college, if you're like me, my parents, we came from pretty modest beginnings, but my sister and I always knew we were going to go to school. We were the fortunate ones. Our parents were going to work hard and make sure that we could have a college education. For people who come from different socioeconomic groups, they may never have imagined themselves going to college. They may have peers that don't support that and don't want them to leave the circumstances they're in. So it's a big step for child of an immigrant or naturalized citizen who has English as a second language. That's very courageous to put yourself out there and go back into the classroom and pursue a degree. So first in their families to go to college, about half. So that is so wonderful because it models breaking that cycle of poverty for the woman's family and the next generations.
Yeah.
So they see it can happen.
Yeah. And then just geographically, are there any states that have never had a Jeanette Rankin Scholar?
Well, we have had women in 49 states and Guam of U.S. territory. But we don't have a scholar from Delaware yet. So that's the only state we don't. We've had a lot of scholars in Montana, all over, many in rural areas. And it's so curious that in some states, the scholars seem to be clustered around cities like Minneapolis, St. Paul, or California, right around San Francisco or Los Angeles. But in other states, like Montana and Wyoming and North and South Dakota, they're spread out all over. So women in poverty live in cities, and they live out in rural areas, and they live in suburbs, too. So we're proud that we serve them where they are, and that also our scholarship may be used for living expenses. It's not required that it only pay for tuition. So each woman is managing her small resources to the best of her abilities. She might need help with childcare. She might need help with transportation or utilities, and so we try to have them use the funds where they're needed most.
Hello, I'm Beth Judy. You're listening to In Other Words on Montana Public Radio. My guests tonight are Sue Lawrence of the Jeanette Rankin Foundation, which serves women over 35 who want to go back to school, and Montanan Francie Mall, a Rankin alumna. Find this show on the In Other Words website this coming week and listen again or share it with a friend. InOtherWordsRadio.com. Well, we are honored and I am excited that we actually have a scholar here with us right now, and that is Francie Mall. Francie, are you there?
Yes.
Francie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And where are you, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
I currently live in Polson, Montana. I have four children and a husband. We're a big soccer family. My oldest son actually plays soccer for his college, and he will be graduating college this year with his bachelor's degree in oral communications.
Wow.
That's great.
That is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So have you been an inspiration to him, I wonder, as you've gone back to school?
I believe so. I have my second son started college this year as well, and they have referenced back to how hard it must have been. I was working full-time and attending school full-time and maintaining my grade point average. I had a 4.0, and they found that to be pretty exciting. And my oldest son, who will be graduating in 2015, tells everybody that his mom just graduated college 2 years ago.
That's great.
And then your two younger ones?
I have a 15-year-old who's a sophomore in high school, and then I have a 7-year-old who's in second grade.
Wow. Quite a wonderful spread.
It is. My last one was a surprise, but it wasn't a surprise the way most people think. He came to me as a foster child, and then we adopted him.
Ah, wonderful, wonderful. And, you know, you're never supposed to ask anybody this, but how old are you in terms of the Jeanette Rankin, you know, group of women that they serve?
Yes, I'm currently 42.
Okay.
When I believe I was 37 when I received my first Jeanette Rankin. It was renewed. I got it for 4 years.
Wonderful.
And it was a huge help and a big strain off of my family, especially having four children at home.
Yeah. Well, describe your life before you went back to school.
Before I went back to school, I was working a full-time job, plus I had my own business on the side, which was a sales business, just trying to make enough money just to get by and to live. My husband had a failing business. It had just closed down. So we were just at a point where we were really, really struggling. When we decided together that I would go back to school, and the Jeanette Rankin Foundation was the first scholarship that I ever received, and it was kind of an inspiring scholarship because I received this national scholarship, and it led me to apply for more and get excited about applying for other scholarships.
Wow. What other scholarships did you apply for?
I applied for many, but the other scholarship that I got that was extremely helpful was the PEO Women's Scholarship. And I was supported by a local chapter, Stevensville PEO, and I actually received that scholarship, and that was my junior year, and that was a tremendous help as well.
Wow. What does PEO stand for?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, if anyone is listening, they can look it up online. It'd be interesting to know. So what made you decide, you know, why did you want to go back to school?
I always wanted a bachelor's degree, and I thought I wanted to be a social worker from the time I was a young girl. Life kind of got in the way. I got married, and shortly after that, I had children, and I didn't feel fulfilled like I had expected by the time I was 35 years old. I had this wonderful family, these great kids, but I felt like I needed something more for myself. So between that and I had a really great friend who was a teacher tell me, give me lots of encouragement and tell me that I could do it. I was smart enough. And between those things, I was able to attend, go back to school.
And had you all been struggling as a family financially?
Yes, we struggled. We struggled a lot, especially because my husband had to close his business down, and we moved to Montana to be closer as a family, but our finances just weren't there. We moved with no jobs, and we were both at entry-level jobs.
Yeah. The economy here is not the greatest, is it?
Right.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you also had a change of occupation in mind. Is that right?
I did. I never saw myself going to school for education. Like I said, I was inspired. I have a great friend here in Polson. Her name is Kristen. And she's the one that really inspired me to go and said that I could do it and I was smart enough. And I really took that to heart, and I was able to accomplish it. I went to school, and I finished in 4 years.
Wow.
That's really wonderful. A lot to do when you have a family and you are making ends meet. So congratulations, Francie.
Thank you.
And was it a helpful, has your change of occupation also, did you have finance in mind, like this would be a better job? I mean, a better field for getting a job?
I don't know if I really thought about getting the job or even the financial aspect of it. I've always worked with children. I always wanted to help children. But living in a small community and being such a close-knit community, I could see there was a high need for children and families alike. And now my current job, I am not a teacher in a classroom, but I'm working with students and their families.
Well, tell us about that. That sounds great.
I work as the 21st Century Learning Center director in the Ronan School District, and we provide after-school program for the children. I run there's two grant programs. There's four schools involved, and I also coordinate the adult education in the Ronan School District.
Wow.
So I'm able to work with children, with families, with adults, all aspects.
Wow.
A lot of responsibility. You're covering a lot of ground in the community.
I am. And I love it.
And Sue, I'm reminded of what you said about how the women are helping their families, but the scholars, but also the community. Because that sounds like that's exactly what you're doing.
Francie's leadership, in this new position she's got, illustrates that she's living up to her potential and continuing to grow, but helping more than just her family. She's helping all those children and the adult learners in the community. And clearly, Francie, I can hear in your voice that you find that rewarding.
I do. It's very rewarding. And it's rewarding just by the kids. The students to look on their face when they see that you care and you're there for them.
And you believe they can do it too.
Exactly.
And so where did you end up going to school, Francie?
I went to Salish Kootenai College in Pablo.
And got an early education degree?
I have an elementary education bachelor's degree.
Great. And you recommend that program?
I do. The instructors are amazing, and they support you in ways that you wouldn't think traditional instructors will support you.
Well, one thing I love about what you said is when I asked about, was it a job that you saw helping your family financially, it sounds like that wasn't the main thing, that it was really a dream you had, and it's fantastic that Jeanette Rankin Foundation supports women's dreams, in addition to seeing practical steps up in life Sue?
Oh, well, thank you. We are so very moved by some of the many of the personal statements, the motivations that women show for, you know, either they didn't think they were college material or started a family early on and finally realized that it's time for them themselves for to pursue their education for altruistic goals or for practical goals. They tend to cross paths and merge together. And they do help women kind of awaken to their own abilities, what they can do and who they can be. And I don't know, Francie, did you ever dream of seeing yourself in the position you've got now 10 years ago, being the leader that you've got in the community for that program, managing those grants?
I did not. That's one of the exciting things that the scholarship provided was it did open many new possibilities. I just want to share that I was actually able to attend Yale University this summer for a one-week fellowship, and that was due to the fact that I was able to attend school, and they took four people from our area, and they taught us about childhood development and mental health for a week. And that was all because Jeanette Rankin was able to help me go to school, and I was able to get that education and show my diversity within the culture of our area, and they chose me.
That's wonderful.
That is really, really great. Yeah. So how did the Jeanette Rankin Fund specifically help you? How did you use your scholarship, and well, I'll just leave it at that for now. How did you use your scholarship towards tuition or?
For my family, actually, my scholarship went, and this may sound kind of strange, but it actually went for groceries for quite a while.
Hey, that's fantastic.
I needed it for living, and that's what it went towards, was mostly our grocery bill.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. Well, a family of six people in the household.
Right.
I imagine that your groceries, they could run out by the end of the week. So.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And what was the process like of applying for you? Do you what do you remember about all of this? Being a scholar for that from what, like 2010 to through 2012, is that right?
I think my first year was 2009 when I received the scholarship. I remember it being I thought it was a long process. It really wasn't. I think I thought it was a long process because it was the first scholarship I had ever applied for.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it was writing your statement, like Sue spoke about. And for me, never being in college before, that was probably the most difficult part. And having enough confidence to submit that statement and submit my resume because I didn't feel like there was enough on it.
Yeah.
So that, for me personally, that was probably the toughest part.
And so what was it like when you learned you were accepted?
I was so excited. I called everybody, including my mom. My mom lives in Las Vegas, and she started crying and told me how proud she was of me, and she never thought she was so proud that I was going to school. She never was able to have that opportunity, and neither was my dad. So I was the first one in our family. So she was kind of overtaken by it. And I was just constantly emailing people. I was so excited I probably told strangers.
That's great.
Excellent. And then along the way, did you feel support coming to you from the foundation? Is that something that the foundation is about as well?
Definitely. We had a Facebook group that we were able to post and share our stories and share our pictures. And it was great because I could see other people around the country, what they were doing, other moms, what they were doing with their education and even with their families. And it was exciting to see, especially being in a rural community like I am. You don't see a lot of photos like that of other women in your same situation going to school and trying to deal with the same things, such as, you know, getting food on the table and getting your kids to school on time and making sure they get to their activities. The support from that aspect of the support was a great help to me.
And Francie, how did you do it? What are some of the things that you discovered about yourself or that you told yourself or that you learned along the way that you feel got you through? I mean, you were working full-time, you said. You had your four kids.
Mm-hmm.
And you were going to school.
I really think that the support of my family, my immediate family, was crucial. My husband was very supportive. He picked up a lot of the slack at home, helping out with the kids, you know, running them to their activities. My kids were very understanding when I had to bring my schoolwork to their soccer games, to their wrestling meets. I always had books with me.
Wow.
And I think the support of my family, and then my one coworker, who is a teacher, she was a tremendous support as well. She kind of kept me going academically. You can do this. You can handle this. I think having outside support is crucial if you are going to take on school along with having a family and a job and all those parts.
Do you feel like you changed during the process of all of this?
Oh, I definitely changed. I have much more confidence in myself as a person now. I try new things. And I think that shows with my family as well. My kids will say, "Mom, you never used to do that. You would never do that before. I went whitewater rafting for the first time this year." And my kids were just shocked that I would even try it. And
wow.
I think that confidence came from accomplishing something of my own, which was school.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's very inspiring. Let's see. Sue, I'm wondering if other scholars' experiences are flitting through your mind as you listen to Francie.
Well, Francie, just congratulations for everything. It's you are exactly what we're all about, and we send our congratulations to you and your whole family because clearly your friend and your family pulled together to so that you had the time to study, and now they're seeing what that's done for you and for the family. And I'm excited that your children are also going on to college, and that is something that we see in other women who have children at home who see their moms working very, very hard. There's one mother who graduated a year ago, and she also has four children. She's living separate from her husband, but her oldest kids look at how the lifestyle and the home and what mom is able to provide now that she's graduated and she has a job, and they say, "Wow," to the younger siblings, "you have it so much easier than we did when, you know, we were all struggling and she was in school." So there seems to be a difference through the children, depending on when mom is in school. But studies show that children of educated moms tend to do better in life. And that's not just that they go on to college, but they are more well off. They're more well rounded. They're happier with their lives. They live longer. So there are health benefits that are out there too. A lot of women seem to tell us that their education has opened their eyes to other opportunities. It's given them the confidence that they can succeed. And it's very hard, as Francie said, trying to balance all those things. Sometimes the outside events impact women's lives. For example, the rules were changed recently for Pell grants, and so many of our scholars who are applying for renewal, they were in their very last year or last semester of school, very close to finishing, but they had so many credits that they were no longer qualified for a Pell grant, so they can see the finish line. They're almost done, and their funding, their federal funding is cut off. So we saw that many times in the past few years from women who are Jeanette Rankin scholars, but they're determined to finish. And so it's great that they know with the Jeanette Rankin scholarship, they'll have that support while they're finishing up.
You're listening to In Other Words. I'm Beth Judy, talking with Francie Mall, a recent Jeanette Rankin scholar, and Sue Lawrence, head of the Jeanette Rankin Foundation, who joins us from Athens, Georgia, where the foundation is based. Sue, are there any scholars that you think of that, you know, you'll just never forget their stories?
That's a good question. Probably the very first scholar I started as a volunteer and was asked to participate in a review process to select a woman for a fine arts award. There was funding for a woman who was somehow going into a program that was related to the arts. And so we had women applying who wanted to be an art teacher in school. We had, I think, a dance instructor, someone in music. The woman that was selected, and it was very close. It was, like I said before, sometimes you get the semi-finalist and you think, I wish we had $10,000 more and could give 4 more scholarships or 5 more. But the woman who was selected was accepted to a very prestigious school, Art Institute of Chicago, and she had a full ride scholarship there based on her portfolio and her work. But she still needed money to help with her living expenses and the other kinds of expenses. And she had an extremely powerful personal statement, and she is a wonderful writer, very descriptive, and wonderful artist. And so I will always recall this particular woman because it was the very first year we had renewal scholarships, but we only had 3. So she did not get selected, and it was an outside committee that did selection for the renewals, and she was not selected, and I was crushed because I thought, oh, I just wanted her, and I wanted all the women who needed continued funding to have scholarships. So we have worked to the point in our program where as long as a woman still has the financial need and is making good academic progress, we will continue to support her, and I think that's very helpful because the need doesn't just go away from one year to the next. So
I bet.
So I do recall that particular student. I recall women who've come to speak at our events. One woman who was had a gunshot wound in her head, and so she had to relearn how to speak and move. And she'd gotten to the point where she was in college, and she was an example to others in her community that they could survive trauma and go on and contribute in their communities. We have a woman who is a current scholar who wants to be an attorney so she can help other women, just as she was helped with legal aid when she needed to get out of a bad situation with a spouse who'd become gradually over time more abusive. And she wants to show others that they can do it and they can rebuild their lives. And she herself had her journey from coming from a wonderful family, very loving and everything, and marrying someone she was in love with. And she converted to another religion. And slowly over time, this relationship became more and more controlled, where she wasn't allowed to see her family and her friends, and she was cut off from them, and she had children, and her world just tightened in. She weighed 500 pounds. She gained so much weight. And finally, her when her son said, "Mommy, Dad, why is Daddy hitting you and hurting you?" She realized that that had to stop. So she sought help, and she made a list of goals, and among them was go back to college. So she successfully finished her associate's degree. She will finish her bachelor's degree this spring, and she wants to go on to law school so she can help low-income people. They tend to be to make some practical decisions so that they can work, but they aren't always ones that people would advocate for so that they don't have a record. So there are just so many amazing stories of women from American Indian background who want to be entrepreneurs and create a business in their community so they can employ people and have a way to support not just their families, but create jobs in their communities, to women who are going to be social workers and maybe be a school counselor because a school counselor helped them along the way, to women who seek engineering degrees or science degrees because they know that that's a talent that they have, a skill that they have, and that they can support themselves and pursue careers in areas that are stimulating to them. So a wide, wide range of fantastic stories from women who are becoming dental hygienists or studying kinesiology to become nurses. Lots of women who see a great future in nursing. We even have, like I said, the English major who is a writer and successful in that, to technical, someone in cybersecurity this year. So really, we want to support women in their dreams and in their goals. And we're very, very excited that Francie could join us tonight and show through her own story, you know, what can be done. And I'm sure she's inspiring some other women to think about, hey, maybe I can go back to a technical school and pursue my own degree. So thank you, Francie.
Thank you.
And Francie, I should have asked you this way a while ago. You're not originally from Montana. Where are you originally from?
I was raised in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Okay.
I was born in Buffalo, New York, but I was raised in Las Vegas. We moved to Montana in 2006.
Okay. I think our time is kind of winding up. I think that we'll bring our chat to an end, but I guess one question I would have for both of you, Sue for the Jeanette Rankin Foundation and Francie for yourself, and these are always hard to think about, so do your best, but you know, what do each of you wish for in the next 5 years? Sue for the foundation and Francie for you and your family.
Well, what I would wish for and dream about may not happen in 5 years. It may take a little longer, but I would wish that Jeanette Rankin Women's Scholarship Fund would be on the same level as Hispanic American Fund or United Negro College Fund, that we would be able to serve hundreds of women and eventually thousands of women every year, because we know the need is out there and we know the opportunity right now is so small compared to the need. So that would be my big audacious dream and goal, because we want women like Francie and many more to have the opportunity that they really need to succeed and conquer poverty.
And if you had to trace out how you would get there in the next 5 years, what would you have to do?
I think we would probably need some major investments from grant organizations, foundations, maybe from Women Moving Millions, a couple of large donors who would invest over a period of time for a 5-year sustaining gift so that we could get there, and getting our word out, because many people don't know about Jeanette Rankin Women's Scholarship Fund. So it's hand in hand, support broadly on a national level, and also awareness broadly on a national level.
Well, Francie and I think, both wish that for you.
Yeah.
Francie, what do you think? What can Sue and I wish for you?
I have a few personal goals and some family goals. My personal goal is to get my master's degree. I haven't decided if I want to get it in school counseling or educational leadership, but that's one of my goals for the next 5 years, is to have my master's degree. Family goal for us, my husband and I would like to be able to buy another house. And for the rest of the family, to have two children graduate from college, and my third will be starting college. So, and he wants to be a doctor. My 15-year-old wants to be a neurologist, I believe that's what he said. So for my third to be starting school.
That's
wow. Fantastic.
That yeah. is. That's so amazing. Well, it's been very inspiring to talk with both of you, and thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, thank you, Beth, for the opportunity to share our stories.
You're welcome.
This has been In Other Words. I'm Beth Judy. To listen again to my conversation with Montanan Francie Mall and Sue Lawrence, Executive Director of the Jeanette Rankin Foundation and Women's Scholarship Fund in Athens, Georgia, check out our website at inotherwordsradio.com. Thanks to Francie and Sue for joining us. And be sure to tell a woman you know about this scholarship opportunity, or look into volunteering and helping them with the selection process. They can use people anywhere, female or male. Next week on In Other Words, Anne Zalda Petri explores the world of bands and bookings with a woman who's an ace. And the next few shows after that will explore Montana's pre-election political landscape from women's perspectives. For now, we'll go out with Sean Colvin. Riding Shotgun Down the Avalanche is, after all, a little like going back to school. And then a classic from Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. This land is your land. Good night.
Falling down the avalanche. land is your land. This land is my land. From California, well, to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. I tell you, was made for you and me. As I went walking down that ribbon of a highway, I saw the meat of that endless skyway. Now I saw below me that golden valley, and I said, this land was made for you.